AA Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, and does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. I'll just now read the set-aside prayer, page 46, paragraph 1. To a God of your understanding, please set aside everything we think we know about ourselves, about our disease, about the big book, the 12 steps, the program, the fellowship, and all spiritual terms, and especially you, God, so that we may have an open mind and a new experience with all these things. Please help us see the truth. Now, the tradition for long form. With respect to its own affairs, each AA group should be responsible to no other authority than its own conscience. But when its plans concern the welfare of neighboring groups also, those groups ought to be consulted. And no group, regional committee, or individual should ever take any action that might greatly affect AA as a whole without conferring with the trustees of the General Service Board. On such issues, our common welfare is paramount. From 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, page 146. I'll now hand over to Speaker One, Bruce. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. I'm Bruce. I'm an alcoholic. And thanks for joining us. And great to, you know, real privilege and an honour to be talking about Tradition 4 on Father's Day, you know, having been able to front up and be a sober dad and a responsible dad today. So it's a lot to be grateful for. And, you know, with the traditions generally, I remember when I first got to AA and seeing a banner with the word traditions on it, I almost immediately dismissed that as it was like a traditional thing on the wall. It was sort of something which, it was like having a picture of the Queen. It was like, that's all very well, but it's not directly relevant to my life right now. And, you know, it was just like a traditional thing that we did. It didn't mean anything. And, you know, I wasn't really thinking about the organisation of AA or how it was run or anything like that. I was just, you know, obsessed with myself and the dire situation I was in, and that was natural enough. And I've come over time just to appreciate the traditions, how important they are, you know, for the fellowship as a whole. And this one is, you know, massively important, you know, a real sort of fundamental sort of principle of how AA runs, you know, at a group level. And, you know, we heard the long form there, and people are also, you know, in the short form, you know, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. And it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. You know, for an organization, that's a pretty weird principle or tradition to have, you know, that each group or each unit or each part is just going to be autonomous. That's a very unusual way to run anything. And it's not run, is it? It's, you know, and that's reflective of AA as a whole. You know, it's not a business or a sports club or something which is run from the top down. You know, it's the opposite. You know, it's run from the bottom up. And this tradition, you know, speaks to that, you know, a lot. And, you know, I think, well, why is it like that? You know, that's not typically an efficient way to run things. You know, surely you'd have the leadership or the experts at the top telling people what to do. And if they don't like to do it, they can go somewhere else. You know, that's more of an efficient, controlling way of doing things. And AA is not like that. And I don't think AA could be like that. It just wouldn't work. It wouldn't have worked for me. And I just don't think it would have lasted. And it's weird. It's counterintuitive, you know. And it's also something that I think was not evolved. You know, I'd like to talk a little bit about where this tradition came from. You know, not in the sort of minute history, but just what drove it to appear as one of the traditions. That, you know, the AA started in 1935, and by 1946, the traditions were introduced in more or less the form that they are now. They're called something different then, but it was so in that time, you know, in that time frame of what sort of, just over a decade, they'd accumulated a lot of experience, a lot of trial and error of what worked and what didn't work, and had gone through every permutation of how groups could be run and what rules are we going to have. And they tried all that stuff. And in the end, come up with this tradition that each group is entirely autonomous, you know. But there's a kind of caveat. There's two sides to it. The group is entirely, can do whatever you want. Your group can do whatever you want. You're entirely at liberty to run your meeting, do whatever you want, how you want. But also, it's up to a point. You know, when you get to that point where it starts to affect AA as a whole or other groups, then you have a responsibility, you know, as it says, as it spells out in the long form, you know, to confer with the trust, the general service structure and so on. So there's a kind of liberty, and then up to a point, and then there's a responsibility to, you know, to consider AA as a whole and the welfare of the group. And, you know, as I say, that's kind of a weird way to do things. And, you know, reading the 12 steps and traditions, you know, there's a good chapter on this tradition in there, you know, and it explains it quite well. And it says, you know, looking at that, wouldn't it be that isn't such liberty foolishly dangerous? You know, giving it, surely this is all going to get completely out of control if everyone's just doing their own thing. And it says, over the years, every conceivable deviation from our 12 steps and traditions has been tried. And probably still is today, you know. And it's that weird thing about AA that's fine. You know, they worked out that it could, you know, the AA could survive anything, and it was necessary that groups would go out there and that there would be trial and error. And over time, you know, groups have sort of, you know, some of the things that we probably think are like some sort of standard operating procedure of how to do things are really just things that probably came out of trial of error of early days of groups, like just things that were tried. And there's been many things that have been tried and discarded, and many things that are now pretty much common to all groups. You know, when you go to a meeting, there's a kind of almost like a thought, the meets can vary, but there's a lot of common things that we'd all read the preamble, and there's, you know, a speaker at the front, and there's just various things. Some of this stuff has just came out of trial and error, you know. But they're also, you know, talking about in the 12 steps and traditions in this chapter, they talk about a group in the Midwest where they have this idea where they're going to set up a big medical clinic with floors, you know, catering to all different types of alcoholics. There's going to be a lot of outside money coming in, and they're going to promote it, and it's going to be great, and it's going to, you know, save alcoholics. And, you know, they try that scheme, which would, you know, we would look at it now, been counter to numerous traditions in AA, and they try it, and of course it eventually all collapses, it all falls apart, you know, as things always seem to do when they stray off from the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. It just doesn't work, you know. And they, their whole enterprise is, you know, blows up and just collapses. Like, I think the expression is like the explosion at Wombly's clapboard factory. And one of the things I did try and research tonight was whether there really was an explosion at Wombly's clapboard factory. And I couldn't get you an answer on that. You know, some people say it did, some people say it didn't. So if anyone actually knows the truth about the Wombly clapboard factory, I'd like to know. But that's it. You know, as soon as you start going off piste and start doing things that are counter to AA's tradition, it goes wrong. It goes horribly wrong, you know. And it did for them. And I think it's that, you know, the beauty of AA that you could just accept it. We were wrong. We were completely off track, you know, and just be humble. And if you can get back to that point, just, you know, put your hands in the air and just go, you know, we're all being sick alcoholics. We stuffed up. Let's get back to basics. You'll be all right. You know, you can get that reset card. You don't get a kind of red card and you're out of the game forever, but like far from it, you know. There's such a wide degree of license in AA with regards to that. And so that's it. You know, that trial and error, which they got to this point in the first place. And it still goes on today, you know. And I think it's a healthy thing, you know, that each group is autonomous in a couple of practical ways, you know, because A, it gives you a variety of groups. People coming into AA, and I know this was true for me, I went to a lot of meetings in the early days, and I did find a home group which suited me, you know. It was a particular group which was good for me, but might not suit everybody, you know. There's different groups, they've got different structures. structure, different sort of vibe in the group. And that's good. You know, people might feel more or less at home in different groups and they've got their own choice about that. As long as all those groups are more or less trying to conform to AA's traditions, you know, as they see them. And they might even disagree as exactly what that means, you know, about what literature we're selling. Groups can disagree, you know, individuals can disagree. But as long as everybody's trying to conform to the traditions, it tends to work out. And so I think that's an advantage. And groups get, you can get, because there's this variation, you can get ideas from other groups. You know, again, there's stuff that, you know, you might, groups, things that seem standard, you know, like, are we going to have an hour meeting or an hour and a half? Do we put our hands up to share? Are we going to have voluntary sharing or not? You know, are we going to have, you know, certain things that get read out about singleness of purpose and things like that? Some of that stuff is just, it's not directly from AA literature in the early days. It's stuff which groups have evolved somewhere along the way, and then it's groups spreading it among themselves. So I think that and then there's other ideas where they try it for a while and then it gets abandoned. So there's a kind of a bit of an evolution, you know, just a kind of, there's enough flexibility in there that groups can kind of evolve and get ideas and can change, try something. If it doesn't work, get rid of it, you know, and I like that. It's not rigid. You know, each group is autonomous. And, you know, and I also think this thing about having autonomous groups and having this non-organized organization is that I just can't, you know, for alcoholics, I can't see it working any other way. You know, it talks about them being children of chaos, you know. And most alcoholics have probably had experience of some sort of organized help, something in the healthcare system or at work or, you know, something where it's an organized hierarchical system which is trying to help you fit or control you or fix you or, you know, and most of us have tried that stuff in some form or another and obviously it didn't work, you know, and yet we come to AA, which is this anarchic self-running organization and it did work and nobody's compelled to do anything as an individual level or a group. And somehow that works, you know, or that worked for me in a way that nothing else could, you know, and then I chose to do things, you know, to follow it, to fall in line with the traditions. But it was, you know, it was me doing it. You know, I wasn't doing it because I'm a reasonable guy. I was doing it because I was desperate. But it did work, you know, and yeah, and it wouldn't have worked in any other sort of way. So on the other side of this, there's that kind of license, that kind of liberty, if you like, the autonomy of the group, right? You can do what you want. But then there is this other side where it's, you know, not doing things that affect AA as a whole and affect other groups. And the law is much more explicit about that. You know, it does spell that out more specifically what that means. So in the short form, it's just pretty, you know, it's one line, it's just autonomous. But the you know, I read the bit out the long form again, and it says, so it's responsible to no other authority than its own conscience. So again, that gives you the clue. It's like the group is autonomous, but it has, you know, it always suggests that it's going to be the group conscience that will be making decisions, you know, that will be guiding the group, its own conscience. Again, not an individual or the traditions of that group, its conscience of the people who are in that group. And it says, but when its plans concern the welfare of neighboring groups also, these groups ought to be consulted. And that's, you know, that's interesting. So it's, and it also, you know, it says no group, regional committee or individual should ever take any action that might greatly affect AA as a whole. And it does beg the question, you know, what are the actions that would affect AA as a whole and what wouldn't? What are the actions of a group that would affect neighboring groups and what wouldn't? So it's, you know, there's no definitive guidelines of what those things are. It's a tradition and it's self-policing. Like nobody really is going to come and enforce something where the group is affecting other groups, you know, unless it's wildly out there. It has to be pretty obvious, you know. So it's kind of a self-policing sort of thing. And the other side about that is there's no real pressure on anyone to go and enforce it, you know. So if I don't like what another group's doing, then I don't have to worry about it, you know, or another individual or anything, you know. It's just, that's just the way it is. It will work itself out, you know. I just need to have faith in this and keep my side of the street clean, you know. Keep keep my group healthy so that, you know, the conscience of my group is doing well. I can't really concern myself with what you're doing or anything like that. You know, so it's it kind of takes that sort of pressure out of it. And I was also thinking, you know, how in practical terms, you know, has this tradition helped me? You know, a lot of because some of these traditions or ideas might seem like they're sort of ideological, shall we say. You know, it's about liberty or it's about and it isn't really, like, all this stuff, and particularly this one, is absolutely, it's practical. It's like, this is, we've tried everything. This is kind of the only way that really works. And as long as we, you know, we'll all just agree to, we're not even agree, it's like, this is what we suggest we're going to do. And it's a very, very practical sort of thing. So I know for me, you know, coming into AA and not thinking about the traditions, but they were how they helped me, you know, from even from day one, you know, going around various groups. And I remember being, you know, even in the early days, being sort of, me and my sponsor sort of semi, you know, we sort of joined this group and whatever they were doing, it wasn't, I don't know, we sort of disagreed with it. And, you know, we expressed that at the group conscience and they didn't want to change. So that wasn't like, oh, that's the end of that. It's not like, well, I'm out of here. That's AA. And it wasn't even, it was just like, oh, all right, well, we're going to leave. We're going to go and start a group, which is basically, you know, AA, it's the traditions and everything, but we're just going to do it the way that we want to do it. I can't really remember what the thing was. And that was just a good lesson to me. You know, there was no need to turn it. It wasn't like a feud or a, it didn't have to drag on. It was just like, all right, no problem. You guys keep doing what you're doing. We've made our point and we're off. And off we went. And we started our group. And our group, you know, took off and went well. And, you know, it's still going now, years and years later. And, you know, I think about how our group has evolved over those years, you know, and having that autonomy also gives that group that kind of responsibility. You know, we've got influence, should we say, over what we're doing. It's like buy-in, I suppose, would be the term. You know, you're sitting down together and making decisions about what we're going to do. And some of those decisions about what brand of tea or what night of the week or are we going to go an hour and a half or whatever, you know, it's all sorts of stuff. So, you know, there's something in having that, being an autonomous group rather than a franchise of an operation from head office where you get a blueprint like McDonald's or something. This is how you do it. This is how you do everything. It's not like that. It's like, okay, here's your traditions. Go off and do what you want, you know, do what you want with it, you know. We suggest that you follow these traditions. Things will probably go a lot better for you and you're less likely to have an explosion in your clapboard factory, you know. And it means, so it just means that we've been, you know, when I think about that, the autonomy of the group and then, you know, the odd time where we've had to, you know, consider things will come up where would this affect other groups around us, you know, or, you know, we're going to be talking in a local rehab. Well, how does that's going to affect the area? And the area might be interested in that. So let's get them involved or that the kind of the service structure, you know. Whereas some things you could just literally just go up and do it on your own and just not participate in that. And there'd be many groups that do things, you know, sometimes like good things, you know, like AA things. But they just, you know, they don't necessarily already consider other areas or certainly the service structure. So, you know, so we've done that. So that's happened in a very practical way where we've used this tradition, you know, all the time, and it's helped our group grow, you know, and yeah, you feel more, you know, proud of the group. You know, you're making decisions, it's growing. The group goes through its ups and downs. You know, you do something and then you go, oh, that didn't work out, we'll get rid of it and presumably make a few mistakes along the way as well. Like that's part of the journey. You know, that's part of being on that team, going through that journey. And it's been amazing being a part of that as well. So, you know, I love it. I love the fact that we're doing these traditions and looking at all this stuff. I know for me it's been, yeah, you know, that's it. I've gone from being that kind of dismissing the banner on the wall to realizing this stuff is absolutely vital, you know, for our fellowship. But it's clever, you know, it's clever stuff that it worked out. It's so flexible that it can survive all these decades and will hopefully survive for, you know, many more. You know, and it's that we, because of this, just this weird structure, you know, where everyone's autonomous and we don't have rules and all that. And at the end of the day, because we don't really need to have like a discipline or, you know, it's kind of enforcing the rules, because if people don't, you know, adhere to the traditions and the program, then they suffer from alcoholism, you know, and then they drink and they die. You know, that's it. That if you don't want that, you know, we recommend that you sort of follow this stuff. So it's been great for me reading up about tradition four, and I think that's it. So I appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Bruce. Thanks a lot for that. Now, the tradition four long form. With respect to its own affairs, each AA group should be responsible to no other authority than its own conscience. But when its plans concern the welfare of neighbouring groups also, those groups ought to be consulted. And no group, regional committee, or individual should ever take any action that might greatly affect AA as a whole without conferring with the trustees of the General Service Board. On such issues, our common welfare is paramount. From 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, page 146. I'll now hand over. Anna, would you like to share with us tonight?
Good evening, friends. My name is Anna. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is 2nd of August 2002. And my home group will meet again on Thursdays in DY at 7 p.m. when we are allowed to gather. So thank you for the opportunity to share on this tradition. I have learned a lot. I went outside my own little experience in AA and looked where actually it comes from and how significant it is for the group and for us alcoholics personally. And thank you so much, Bruce, for taking the first part of this share. I thoroughly enjoyed what I've heard. So I went for history, and initially the traditions were called traditional principles. And what comes on Calico now in 12 points of traditions really is the best out of lessons learned to answer the question, could we function as groups and as whole? This is 1937, before the book was published. And traditions are the lessons learned. But one tradition, and that is tradition four, has been actually formed as a specific response to a specific statement, because AA has been by that time operated from AA headquarters. So Bill and Bob were in charge, and groups stated very early in the piece that, and this is AA comes of age, page 103. The group said to AA's headquarters, we like what you are doing. Sometimes your suggestions and advice are good, but whether to take you or leave you alone is going to be our own decision. Out in the groups, we are going to run our own show. We are not going to have a personal government in New York or anywhere else. Services, yes, but government, no. And it says here, hence group autonomy. They told us what they wanted and included the right to be wrong. And that reflects the term which so often comes up in literature, adolescence, adolescent period. And this is what was happening. When I drank, I stopped my development at the adolescent level. And adolescence is actually characterized by two very strong traits. First is rebellion against authority, and second is shrinking from responsibility. And that's how we come. And that's how AA is. Each group contains is composed of members. It's not an abstract entity. So the group represents the mentality, the spirituality of an adolescent. And what happens is that any rules from above would be met with complete and absolute rebellion. And when Bruce was giving an example of mid-40s, that's what happened. This enterprise necessitated 61 rules. And of course it collapsed. So when everything got sorted out, the guy who was in charge wrote on a card and distributed into other groups, rule 62, don't take yourself too seriously. And this is a great reassurance that I can go into fear that something is going wrong in AA, in a groups, in an area, something is wrong. But the truth is that first of all, fellowship is a spiritually centered entity where no rules apply. And we learn from one another. What has been working has been adopted. For example, the first such a strong evidence is that in 1940, when the book was already available, people were not staying sober that well. And one group in LA, in the United States, they started to read at the group, at the beginning of the meeting, chapter 5. And group has become strong and became sort of mother group in that particular area. And we do it now all over the world. So whatever worked, they read how the program worked and they adopted it. And hence, by word of mouth, we took it on and we still do it in our meetings here. So on one hand, autonomy initially by Bill was saying that two or three alcoholics can gather together for the purpose of to try sobriety. And they don't even have to observe any of AA principles. It's their autonomy. The extreme situation was in Australia. The first group which was formed in Australia was formed by three non-alcoholics, Dr. Minogue, Father Dan Lee, and Archie McKinnon. They were people who desperately wanted to help alcoholics. There were three of them and they had a book. So three non-alcoholics and the book produced the first sober alcoholic through AA in Australia, Rex, who became secretary and corresponded with the headquarters in US. So there is no saying what actually will work. The principles which are bound in traditions, it's Bill said at some point that these principles, initially when we come, are to be observed, so we either observe them or we die. And that is the dictatorship initially of alcohol, of active alcoholism, versus freedom, which is given by the consciousness and the power of a loving God. And initially we come and we obey. But then I found out that much of this is good for me. And then I started to work through the program and traditions because I wanted to. not because I was forced to, as I was in the beginning. So how does that work on a practical level in a group? The autonomy says that we are self-governing. And self-governing means freedom. And freedom is either self will run riot or producing chaos, or freedom is combined with responsibility. And that's the true freedom. So personal recovery from alcoholism is absolutely essential for the health of the group. It's indispensable because that's what's reflected. How do we affect other groups? So we have the format we want. We have group conscience. We rotate services. I'm talking about my home group. How can we affect neighborhood groups and in a negative way? First of all, by not having a healthy relationship with community and places we hire the hall for the meeting. So we need to always observe our relationship, how we are treating the place we rent, and how we interact with those who are letting us in. Do we leave the place clean? Do we leave cigarettes outside? Are we noisy if there is a residential area? This all affects other groups because bad name of one group will be restricting the availability of the places for others. So that's very important. Then, for example, literature we carry in the meeting, it is beneficial to actually stress that there is an AA approved conference approved literature, and that there is a literature from other sources, and the literature which is conference approved really is very important as a binding cement for the unity, because the message is run through the group, through the conscience of the fellowship. So on a personal level, autonomy of groups allowed me to get sober. I came to the group and I have been offered solution. I wasn't pressed or forced to assume any particular activity or conform to any particular way of thinking. Washingtonians were all for self-knowledge and human power. Oxford groups were all about God's power, but through religious affiliations. We took the best out of those. But what was given me was personal freedom in the rooms. And what happened for me was that I came into the rooms of AA and I stopped disintegrating. Alcohol bashed me and broken me into pieces. And what this place, what the fellowship allows me to do, was to enter in relationship with the power greater than myself, which put me back together and holds me together. And that was my personal, absolutely personal journey and personal growth in environment of freedom. And now it is about freedom, initially freedom from alcohol. Now it is a freedom to grow. And growth is mentioned in a big book. It says we need to keep growing spiritually. this is the condition for an alcoholic. The last three steps, 10, 11, 12, talks about maintenance of spiritual growth, not maintenance of what I have today. And freedom to grow is together with responsibility. So I am responsible for my life, and I am autonomous in my life as well. And that applies to the family. The family as a unit is autonomous in regard to their affairs, to the neighborhood or community. We can affect others, others can affect us. So keeping this tradition in mind is very important. But also, it is that I need to get a life. This is what it is. Being autonomous and being responsible for one's own affairs means I have to get a life. I have to become a person who is fully alive. And fully alive means that I need to apply to my life constructive solutions. If I do it in my life, I will be able to be a member of community or society equal to any other. So what this means, why it is connected to a tradition for, because that actually originates in a group conscience of the group. We are there for one purpose only. How do we carry the message? How can I have creative solution to carrying the message? That's the purpose of group conscience. And if I am there willing and recovering in my personal recovery, I will get an inspiration. I will get intuitive thought. And with intellect, I would make some kind of proposal to the group conscience. And there it comes. No authority of government, but the principle of communication and consultation. And for that reason, we have a general service structure. So the inspiration from the individual comes to the group, and from the group flows into the fellowship, because this is the only way. So general service structure facilitates inspiration from the higher power, from a loving God. And then there is a central service office, which is in area, which allows me to fulfill my another responsibility, which is connected with autonomy and freedom, which is service. So those two things are in place to allow me to exercise what this tradition is about. And by that, I can go home and have creative solutions in my little autonomous life. And for example, not blaming the circumstances for not being able to express myself. And this is probably a very silly example, but my three last photos I've taken, I am trying to do some art, are of the bottom of the pan where I took the milk, almond milk out, and there were little bubbles of foam and little streaks and stripes and empty patches and things. And I have three photos which look like actually masterpieces and doesn't remind of anything. It can be anything. It's just beautiful. So when I'm recovering and supported the way I am at the moment, in any moment of time, I can be fully alive. And for that, I'm very grateful.
Thank you so much, Anna. That That brings us to the end of Tradition 4. I'd really love to thank the speakers, both Bruce and Anna, for your contribution. That was lovely. And I shall finish with the Serenity Prayer in the We. God, grant us the serenity
to accept things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.